I'm happy to introduce Jay Caldwell, who I was explaining to Tom earlier is part of the mom and pop gallery on Warren Street called the Caldwell Gallery. And you are one of the partners, I gather, in that gallery. Is that right?
Yes, I am. It is a small family business, and my parents and I are the principals.
You have to stay close.
I know you
want to
look at Ellen. Everybody does.
I'll just move around the other side.
There you go. That's a good idea.
There you go.
Now, I hear that you began, your business is really began upstate in where, Syracuse?
We're based outside of Syracuse, New York, and we've been there since 1973.
Without a gallery, right?
Or is that it's a private space.
Private space.
So it's at my parents' home, and that's how they set up their business.
Wow.
When Dad decided to follow his passion.
And it's strictly art gallery, or do you also do antiques and things like that?
Early on, there was a lot of antiques. My parents still have a fairly sizable collection of early American rugs, silver, Queen Anne Chippendale furniture. But Dad said he kind of saw his first painting and started looking at the walls more than the...
Do you know what it was?
Well, there was one auction early on in his... career as a dealer that was in Cooperstown, and it was a major estate. Cooperstown was a large summer home spa type of area for wealthy...
I bet you I know who the auction dealer was. Oh, Rundle Gilbert.
Well, it was before my time. I was just, at that point, probably around 10, 11 years old. But my dad went down to preview this sale, and there was a very dirty... painting there. He could sort of barely make out, you know, the figures, and he previewed the sale and then did some research and came back to the sale the next day when they were actually having the live auction, and was able to buy a painting, believing it was by a very rare Italian master named Girolamo Induno. And indeed, after cleaning, it turned out to be just that, and his art dealing career was off and running with a fantastic work that ended up going back to Europe.
This was the days before computers where you did your research, you know, on your iPhone.
This was well before those days, Ellen. And
he actually used books, probably.
Well, we still do have a lot of analog pulp and ink in our library. We have a very sizable art history reference library. It's an incredible resource. In some cases, you're going to catalogs and finding information that is simply not going to be online. So we still rely on that. And one example was some years ago, this was during the internet era, where we were offered a painting and we went back to a book we had that was published in 1942 on this artist, a very rare book. And in the back of the book, under the listings, there was a citation for this work. And we realized that it was a long-lost example by a very important American artist, William Sidney Mount. And it turned out to be just extraordinary. And so those are exciting things that you simply Googling that wouldn't have helped us.
So, and that continues to happen, though. I mean, I just read, I forget if it was who it was by, but a master was just sort of reattributed because it had been so dirty and it had been cut in half. And when they put it back together and cleaned it, they gave it the proper attribution. So it's still possible to find things like that that are so dirty or unpreserved that their hidden treasures are still to be found.
Absolutely. Well, we wake up every day with that hope as an art dealer. And
on the other hand, I'm sure the bulk of your business, and you know exactly who you're buying, and your seller knows it too, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things in this day and age that the amount of information that's available to everyone. It's kind of a blessing and a curse. In some cases, people are going online and looking up information and then extrapolating things, and they may be going to an auction and buying a work that's a 3 out of 10 in terms of quality that's in poor condition and wondering why, you know, we might have a work that could be priced at 10 times that amount. And ours happens to be, you know, a piece that might have been, you know, museum level piece in great condition. And, So information is sort of power, but it's also can create some confusion if people don't really know how to contextualize what they're seeing on the internet, and that's part of our mission as a dealer, is to basically help people put things in context. Mm-hmm. And the art world is, first of all, about falling in love, and we do that or not with a work within seconds of seeing it. And then you have the job after that to basically validate those feelings or do research that helps you make a decision that's a no instead of a yes. So,
And dealers can actually help establish a reputation.
Well, indeed, and that's part of the mission, especially, I mean, contemporary art on the primary market is all about that, and, mm-hmm. and some of that, as we know, is can be quite confusing. It feels a little bit like emperors without his clothes in some cases, and who gets to be a star and who doesn't. When we get to the secondary market, which is what we handle, basically we're handling the works of deceased artists. They are works that had been sold either by the artist or their gallery a long time ago, and then they've come back into the secondary market, and you have a track record over time of secondary market sales, both at galleries and at auction, that help to sort of sift and sort through who's going to stand the test of time and who's mm-hmm. going to drift off into obscurity.
And within that range, I mean, within each artist's reputation, there's a range of, as you were saying earlier, a range of works. I mean, not every work by an artist is worth the same amount, because they're not everything they do is as good.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some artists who they edited themselves very carefully and mm-hmm. destroyed works. You know, Frederick Remington had a giant bonfire in the back of his house with a bunch of works he didn't feel mm-hmm. were worthy. And what that did is allowed him to sort of purge his mind of feeling constrained by being known as an illustrator, and allowed him to blossom into the incredible late works he did in the last 4 to 5 years of his life. Mm. And they're very rare, and the marked difference between that and his earlier work was something where just psychologically he needed to make that break. We actually had the joy of handling one of his late nocturnes, and one of the greatest paintings that ever came through our door.
I was just reading an article about George Caleb Bingham and how the variations in the prices of his work are based on what the work is, so that his work about fur traders on the Missouri River are, you know, huge, and then some of his more ordinary paintings are just really not worth that much.
There's artist after artist after artist where you can point to similar things, and you get the right work from the right period, and the sky can be the limit. You get other works from different periods in their career where they maybe weren't doing things as interesting. As much interest to the viewers, and the values can be fractional.
Now, you're featuring a single artist right now, or just that's part of what you have in the shop right now?
Well, last weekend we opened a new series of shows. It's two different exhibitions. We have two floors at the gallery, and on the first floor we're featuring 15 works by Julio de Diego. He was a Spanish-born artist who came to the States in about 1924, settled in Chicago, and ended up having a wonderful career that was marked by numerous awards, but also things in his personal life, such as being married to Gypsy Lee Rose in the late 40s. Yeah. And you take a fiery personality like his and her personality, and I'm assuming it was kind of like two comets being a little bit too close together. The marriage didn't stand the test of time, but we have some great works on the first floor by him, including five from his Atomic series that he did in 1948. Everyone was sort of shocked and fascinated and scared by the arrival of the atomic era, and Julio de Diego chronicled that in a series of just extraordinary works, and I would encourage anyone who, whether they want to see something wild and poignant and intense or not, to visit the gallery and take a peek at these works, because they're really something else. And then upstairs on our second floor gallery, we're featuring American modernism with a figural component. So these are works from the 20s to the 1970s. Yeah. By a wide range of artists that were working in numerous modern modalities, and the human figure is somewhere present in each work. So a couple of interesting shows, and they're up until July 19th.
And you're on Warren Street. What number Warren Street?
We're at 355 Warren, right next to Moto Coffee Shop.
Now,
how convenient.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we share a wall with that place, and I think we have one of the better smelling galleries in town, because between coffee and waffles, it doesn't get much better than that.
Now, is everything in your shop in the higher range? I mean, we can't talk prices, but I mean, are we talking multiples of thousands of dollars for most of your bands?
Well, I mean, we're happy to talk pricing. We really feel have a we have a wide range of works, yeah. And everything from things in the very low range of the art market to things in seven figures.
Okay.
So we don't want people to feel like they should be afraid of walking in the door.
That's what I'm trying to get.
Just with
here,
the desire of looking. If anyone has an earnest interest, we are absolutely delighted to have them come through the door. It makes us feel good as dealers. And but we have things in every price range you can imagine. We are very eclectic in what we handle. And if we have a great work that's a $3,000 painting by a lesser known person, that's great. If we have a important work by a modern master or American artist that's a $300,000 painting, well, that could be on our walls also.
And you still have the gallery in Syracuse?
Yes, that's right in association with my parents' home and always has been. So there's a large, it's a large home, and there's a lot of office space. There's a lot of gallery spaces, and then there's their personal space. And so I grew up in that home and came back to the Syracuse area after college. And so I commute just a few houses away in our little suburban neighborhood with where I live with my family, and back to the home I grew up in as our, you know, 24/7, 365 back office in Manlius, New York. And then we decided to open this project here in Hudson on the recommendation of a friend, and that's been a real delight. We're coming up on year one.
Oh, it's been that long. Yeah, I remember when they went in. Don't you, Ellen?
Yes, I do. I do, indeed.
Ellen, you know, keeps a keen eye on everything that happens on Warren Street.
I
not
know
as
that.
Keen as some people.
Well,
we know. But why did you make the decision to come to Hudson? I'm curious about that.
Well, it's slightly convoluted, a lot of fun, and it involves a good friend of many years. I believe he might have been on this show, but Ronald Wells of our Wells Gallery. We've known him
BFF
for years and years and years. He's one of the great beards in Hudson. And
the greatest beard.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe they need to have a beard off or something in this place. I think it'd be very popular. But I was doing an art fair in Winnetka, Illinois, and Ronald came to pick me up. He had his art and a lot of modern design. It was in a box truck. He came to the gallery in Manlius. We're driving out on 90 heading, you know, west past Buffalo and into Ohio, and I think we went into a couple states I'd never even been in. I don't know that I'd ever been in Indiana, but I drove through it at like 110 miles an hour with Ronald behind the wheel. And in the meantime, he had been in Hudson for about, he hadn't opened yet here, but he had been living here and had found an apartment and had heard about this, you know, this dynamic sort of magical place called Hudson, New York. And he, every time I talked to him on the phone, he just kept telling me about it. And so we're driving out there and he's just like, Jay, You gotta think about opening in Hudson. You gotta come and scout this place. And so we did our show in Winnetka, and I got back, and that was in the fall. And I said, you know what? I'm coming down to Hudson. I'm gonna check this place out. And so I booked a room at the Barlow, my first night in Hudson was hanging out there. I stumbled on Club Helsinki. I found myself down getting a chunk of bread or a croissant at Cafe La Perche, and next thing I know, I'm like, gee, I could kind of see a gallery in this place. It took us a little while to find the space that was we felt would work for us, but we finally did, and the build out took a while, but we're just delighted. It's really a place where we feel anytime our door opens and the little bell goes off that someone could be walking in from anywhere. And one of our first weekends we were open, a friend of mine who I know, good collecting friends of his, came into our gallery, and I said, where are you from? They said, Colorado. And I said, well, what are you doing here? They said, a wedding. And so these were people who just, from the people coming off the trains to collectors who've known us and said, aren't you those guys from Manlius? And we're like, yep, that's us. We're just, we're able to see people and show things in a way that's a little different than the private setting back outside of Syracuse. So,
well, yeah. All roads lead to Hudson.
I guess they do. And
ever since you moved here, Ellen.
Ronald Wells and come from the same town, tiny town outside of Binghamton, New York, called Kirkwood.
Well, there you go. I've driven by it 9,000 times on Route 81, and
yep,
I can't say I've stopped in very often.
Ellen knows
numero
his people.
Uno.
You know his people, right, Ellen?
I know his people.
Wow.
Right.
And by the way, folks, you want to go see Julio de Diego's work at the Caldwell Gallery, but at Ronald's Gallery... And I got to do this, Ellen, because he's my little buddy.
Yes, I
Chris
know.
Chris Perry's work at Ronald's Gallery.
I was at the opening. I Instagrammed it. I did amazing. Everything. I touched things that were movable.
Yeah,
I
you're allowed to touch.
Milled around with the happy, shiny, beautiful people, and it was a great opening. It was
thank you. I was one of those people.
Yeah, kudos to Chris and the setup that Ronald did.
Right, he displayed it beautifully.
The 700 block, it just great. Looks stunning. I mean, I love the giant vessel in the front window with the it's got rubber mulch,
right?
And
then one of Chris's pieces,
and one of Chris's pieces just—it looks like brilliant. A set from a movie. It's exactly. just gorgeous.
Well, I want to get back to your gallery here.
Well,
looks beautiful. Well, I'm just changing
you know, Chris is a BFF. I got to take care of him.
No,
and
I know, I know. But
but Jay will be in the future.
This is a connection. It was the rubber mulch that got me.
Oh. Really?
You have AstroTurf down in your gallery, don't you?
Well, we do, and I guess
it's gorgeous.
I don't want Ronald to take over the show. If you're listening, Ronald, you take over no matter what because you're a tornado unto yourself.
That is true.
But as we were building out the gallery, there were a lot of things regarding the space where we had to make some decisions, and there was a floor system there that was kind of nifty but also a little uneven. And it's like, well, what can we really do to unify this as a gallery? And as we started trying to make decisions, I actually was bouncing some ideas off of Ronald. And he said, you know, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to tell me I'm crazy. Then I'm going to send you a photo. And I'm like, okay. Because I was like, what are we going to do with this floor? And so Ronald said, sparkly black AstroTurf. Mm-hmm. I said, you're crazy. My email went bing. And he showed me a picture of a pop-up gallery he had done in this stuff. And I'm like, wow. It looks really great. It unifies things. It and our entire floor of the entire gallery, first floor and the entire second floor of the building is basically a giant plastic and rubber floor mat. So it's a great surface. It wears well. And we've had 999 people love it. And one lady came in the first weekend we were open and kind of wrinkled her nose and said, I do not like this floor. And so all I could think of was Dr. Seuss and Green Eggs and Ham. And I wasn't going to make her happy. But everyone else has liked it. And a lot of people popped their flip-flops off and kind of threw, ooh, this stuff feels kind of nice on my feet. And it does feel great in your bare feet. But there may be some codes in Hudson, the city codes for sanitary purposes. So I don't know if we are allowed to have people.
How do you vacuum it?
You vacuum it.
Or you wash it. Do you take a hose?
We haven't had to do that yet, so I'm knocking on wood. Basically, it's just the dirt just sits on top of it. We run a little vacuum across it every day, and it's a pretty easy peasy, and the stuff should last for 1,000 years. So,
a couple informational questions. What are your hours at the gallery here?
Well, they're posted on our website. This time of year, it's basically Thursday through Saturday, 11 to 6, Sunday, noon to 5.
And your website address is?
And our website is www.CaldwellGalleryHudson.com.
C-A-U-L?
C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L. So it's CaldwellGalleryHudson.com.
And you're at
355
Warren Street?
Yep, right next to
right
the food
trucks. Right next to
Moto. And Moto.
So you can get jazzed up on coffee, buy a painting, hop on a motorcycle from Moto, and
right.
take your painting home.
Well, you don't want to forget getting a artisanal donut at Gracie's also.
Oh, yeah, I heard.
I'm just going to throw that
Gracie's?
Out there. As a
Where's Gracie's?
That's one of the
it's
new
one
food
of the
trucks.
Food trucks.
Oh.
So we have the wonderful
they
folks
are,
with the Mexican food and wraps.
Right.
We got the new guy,
Savory,
with wonderful sandwiches. And then we've
Great.
Got Gracie's with, you know, burgers and donuts.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And a burger on a donut.
Burger on a donut, yeah.
I don't know that. If that is really... Is that un-American or is that just is that what America's all about?
It's inventive.
Yeah.
It's creative. It's creative.
It is.
I didn't mean to stop the conversation.
No, it's okay.
I had a piece of one of those donuts and it was delicious.
Yeah, they're pretty scrumptious.
Just a piece.
Well, yeah, you know.
I had a cake donut and they had some sort of like it was like a tangerine mango glaze on it. And I'm just like, are you kidding me?
Mm.
I locked myself in the gallery so I wouldn't run back out and go buy another one. So
how long will the Julio Di Diego show be showing?
July 19th will be the two exhibits that are up. And then we pull it all down and we're putting up for the balance of summer selections. And it'll be both traditional and modern works of themes that could be thought of as summery. Boats and oceanside scenes.
Cats.
And
I like cats.
Lakes. And we have a great piece that's one of
cats
the artists.
Cats are all weather.
Cats are all weather. But so it'll be a summery themed show. And we're very excited about a project that we're doing as our first show in the fall that we're going to launch. And this is a really exciting thing for us. The Munson-Williams-Proctor Institute is in Utica, New York, and it's one of the stealthy and most amazing museums in this country. When their Masterworks collection traveled the country 5 or 6 years ago and plunked down at major museums throughout the country, people were just like, what is this place? Where is it? How did they get a 20-foot wide Jackson Pollock? Mm-hmm. They're the repository of Thomas Cole's Voyage of Life. And it's just an extraordinary place. But a few years ago, a gentleman who had taught there for decades and was also a really wonderful artist who showed in New York in the 50s and 60s by the name of Easton Pribble, he basically passed away and bequeathed to them for the purposes of sale to bolster their art acquisition funds his lifetime collection, and we'll be the exclusive agents on behalf of the Easton Pribble collection, and we'll be bringing that collection to Hudson, New York for a first ever showing.
Couple highlights?
150 works of art by this guy. From the 1950s until around the 1990s.
And it's all work by him.
And we're very, very excited. It's a great project. We feel like we're going to help the museum fulfill its mission. And even if hopefully when we sell the collection out, they'll have a nice pile of wonderful money to go out and buy some great works that would help bolster and fill holes in what is one of the collections I encourage people. If you can come to Hudson, you can certainly go to Utica, New York. Stop in at Canajoharie on the way to go to the public library there and see 5 Winslow Homers collected by the Arkell Beechnut gentleman way back in the 1920s. And there's a lot of treasures upstate that people don't realize.
That's right.
I mean, the Hyde collection up in Glens Falls is just unbelievable. They had a Georgia O'Keeffe show there a couple of years ago that it was just... I mean, it was absolutely stunning, and it's a small context. You're not being run over by crowds. You don't feel like a piece of cattle being pushed around, and you can really spend some time with great works of art. And I encourage anyone who wants to come up to this area to also sniff around. There's some great stuff within striking distance.
You could give a great tour of upstate New York museums and galleries.
Well, we spend a lot of time there ourselves. My parents have been dragging me and myself and my 2 sisters around a museum since we were, knee-high to a grasshopper. Other families went to beaches, and we went to, museums and antique shops and galleries and antique stores. And, I thought it was kind of not so great back in the day, but now I realized some stuff kind of rubbed off, and actually they were taking us to some fun places.
Hmm. Great.
So we've been talking to Jay Caldwell of the Caldwell Gallery here at 355 Warren Street. If you want to get more information on the hours and all that kind of thing, go to Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L, Gallery, Hudson.com.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. We appreciate it.